environment and also about the collaborative interaction. So how to navigate with other users and how to co-manipulate some object together. So yeah, it can be really interactive. So if you want, you can don't hesitate to stop me to ask a question. It's totally fine. So I start with this small recap about virtual reality. So a virtual environment is a 3D virtual world simulated by a computer. I think you know all of that. And the idea is to create a virtual world where the user can go and have the feeling to be. And we talk a lot about the feeling of presence. I think you probably heard about that. So the feeling to be inside a virtual environment. So in my opinion, which is interesting, it's not only having something realistic, but it's also to create a psychological state of mind that you have the feeling. If when you read a book sometime, you can have the feeling to be in the story of the book. So it's not only about the realism of the feedback that you get from the system, it's also how you are doing. And I think something really interesting in when you are doing something, so doing some interaction, you can have this feeling of presence. And even if it's not really realistic because you are doing some stuff, and especially in the case of collaboration, when you are doing stuff with others, you even have a better feeling of presence because you are doing it together. And even if it's not realistic, you have the feeling that you are working with this other person. The idea is to have interaction in real time through various material devices. And yeah, you have this immersion in the virtual world, what we call immersion, so it's to be inside this virtual world. And it can go through several multisensory perception of the virtual environment. So usually we saw stuff about the visual representation of the virtual environment, but it can also be the sound, the haptic force when you are using some haptic device, and a lot of other stuff. So yeah, I like this way to present the virtual. It's kind of a scheme which describes the virtual reality, in my opinion. So you have in one part the virtual environment, which is related to the 3D model, virtual object, and behavior of this virtual object. And then you have a set of devices, so the sound, visual device, input device, that make the link between this virtual environment and the user. And the last thing is what we call action perception loop. It's this loop here because the user will act on the device and on the virtual environment through various devices. But then this action will modify the virtual environment. So it will modify the way he perceives the virtual environment. And this new perception of the virtual environment will probably modify the way he acts on the virtual environment. And then we get this action perception loop. So as I modify the virtual environment, for example, if I'm walking, then I see a wall, then I will stop because I have a wall in front of me and I will turn. So it's kind of action perception loop. So I will just talk quickly mainly about what is the interaction in the 3D virtual environment. You will probably see some of this stuff, but maybe not all, and it will help with the other part about collaboration. So that's why I do this small recap about interaction. So usually there is three kind. We define three kind of interaction technique in a virtual environment. So there is how you manipulate object of this virtual environment. There is how you manipulate your viewpoint in the virtual environment. So with what we call navigation. So it's kind of modification of also one object, but it's one really particular object, which is the user point of view. And there is also the application control, which is how you control all the parameters of the virtual environment. For example, the rendering parameter. So it's more related to the application, but it's also one part of the interaction. If you want to know more about 3D interaction, there is this really, really famous book, which is 3D User Interfaces, which is really well famous. Bowman is really famous for this book, but he's just lucky because his last name starts with B, so he's the first author of this book. So he's the one with, everybody says the book from Bauman, but at least, in fact, it's three authors, and I think the contribution is quite equal between these four. So I will start just to give you some overview of these three points. So I will start with navigation. So what is navigation? So the thing of navigation, it's move the user viewpoint. So if I'm in a virtual environment, I will want to travel in this virtual environment. So I will want to modify my point of view on this virtual world. So it means moving the point of view, but it also in the case when we can have also some multi-scale virtual environment where we can, for example, if you want to explore the human body, we want to change the scale and be able to see some microscopic part, but also some high-level part. So modifying the point of view, it's also modifying the scale that we have on the virtual world. And then the user can manipulate its own point of view, of course. But we will see in the case of collaboration, we can also want to manipulate the point of view of the other. So if we want to show something to some other user, we want maybe to be able to manipulate their viewpoint or to bring them somewhere and show them something on the virtual environment. And the last thing about navigation is can include also the pathfinding. So it's I will not go more in detail on that, but just to tell you that it's not only moving the point of view, it's also trying to find your path in the virtual environment. So there are various techniques that can help you to find your path in a virtual environment, and this usually we include this in navigation because it's the thing that can help you to do the navigation. So for navigation, there is all the what we call classical techniques, so we can sort them in two categories. So the first one is egocentric, so which is related to the user. So we can also have several things. So where usually it's what's the more current thing and that we can see sometimes in some video games and stuff like that is the walking metaphor. So the user is traveling in 2D, so backward, forward, and left and right, and can move like that in the virtual environment. So it's like he was walking on. We can also have the flying metaphor, so it's almost the same, but just you add another degree of freedom. I can go up and down and kind of fly in the virtual environment. So this one is usually not really realistic, but it can help you to go around some object or thing like that. And the last one is the driving metaphor. So sometimes to make the traveling more realistic, because we cannot really walk sometimes in the virtual environment setup. So then we can add, for example, here you have a bike, and the user is riding the bike, and then he can travel using that in the virtual environment. And so the second part is the exocentric way of traveling. So it's now not related anymore to the user, but it's related to the virtual world. So I just give you two examples. So the first one is NaviJet. So it's this image here. So the idea is you have a virtual ray, and when you point object, you have this small sphere that appear around the object. And then, I don't know if you see, but it's a bit tiny, but you have here a small camera. So you can move this camera all around the sphere, and here you have a preview of what the camera will see. So you move the camera around, and when you have a view on the object that you like and that you want to go, you just select, press a command, I don't know, and you are moved to the position of this camera. So it's a way of traveling which is really related to the object, and it's a good way for some when you have some object and you want to have a precise view of this particular object, you can use this exocentric navigation technique. And the second example is the grabbing the air technique. So the idea, instead of using any device to travel, you can use only your hand and grab the virtual world and bring it to you. So it's kind of, that's why it's called egocentric, because it's still related to the virtual world. It's slightly different, but you can grab the virtual world and bring it to you. So I will show a short example. It's, I think, easier to understand if you see it. So I don't know if I put all the video, because this video is just about a particular device. But
Digits is a wrist-worn 3D hand tracker for gestural interactions on the move. The wrist-worn sensor allows the full 3D pose of the user's hand to be recovered in real time, while removing the need for wearing a data glove that covers the entire hand. The recovered hand pose can easily be used to recognize diverse gestures, even while on the move. Our system can be used in a variety of scenarios, including 3D gaming and augmented reality, where both discrete or continuous hand gestures can be used to control input. As the device is wrist-worn, no line of sight to an external sensor placed in the environment is required. The user can perform subtle gestures while resting their hands on their leg or table. Digits is built using only off-the-shelf hardware. The main components are a wrist-worn infrared camera, infrared laser line generator, additional diffuse infrared illumination, and an inertial measurement unit. One interesting interaction possibility Digits enables is 3D spatial interaction around a mobile device that is seemingly interweaved with traditional touch interaction. Here, the user starts semantic zooming using an in-air pinch gesture and continuously controls the zoom factor with the remaining fingers. Another gesture is used for panning the interface or manipulating an object once it has been selected through touch. Another interesting design space for Digits is eyes-free interactions, where no visual feedback is required to control a mobile device. In this example, the user controls functions of a mobile device while the device is left in the pocket. Here, the user turns on the radio, switches channels by mimicking the turning of a dial, changes the volume by moving an invisible slider up and down, and finally answers a call by doing a thumb-up gesture. Digits can also be used for fine-grained 3D interactions, for example, as a wearable gaming controller. In this example, the user mimics a gun with their fingers to shoot targets, and navigates within the virtual environment by performing a grabbing motion and moving the arm,
grabbing the virtual environment,
and also selecting objects using hand gestures. We have presented Digits, a wrist-worn sensor that recovers the full 3D pose of the user's hand in real time, while removing the gun, for example, as a wearable gaming controller. In this example, the user mimics a gun with their fingers to shoot targets, and navigates within the virtual environment by performing a grabbing motion and moving the arm, and also selecting objects using hand gestures. We have presented Digits.
So this is what we call the classical navigation technique. So it's what we mainly will see in most of 3D virtual environment, but there is still some other technique. So there is the technique that is called that assists the navigation. So it's still in the classical technique in this category, but the idea it's sometimes it's hard to move in a virtual environment because you have, if you want to do some of stuff, you have to control also at sometimes 2, 4 or maybe 6 degree of freedom to travel in the virtual environment, and it can be really hard to adjust the position. So these techniques try to help the user to travel and in a more convenient way. So usually it can be decomposed in 2 tasks. So the first task is to select a destination in the virtual environment. So instead of having to travel all around the virtual environment, you can just select the destination, for example, and be moved to this destination, and you don't have to spend, I don't know, 5 minutes to travel all around, and you can just go there directly. So to select the destination, you have sometimes you can just point. I think show you some example later. But you can point on the virtual environment, and you are moved to this destination. You can use a world in miniature, so it's a small map of the 3D virtual environment, and you can select where you want to go. And it can be also some list of defined paths. So this can be useful, especially in the case of some virtual tour or virtual museum. So you can be moved all around the museum, and you don't have to. You just select at the beginning which set of painting you want to see, and you are moved automatically in the virtual environment, and you don't have to care about the travel. So this is to select the destination, and then to move, there is several ways to do. So the first one is just do teleportation. So when you select a destination, you just arrive there. The bad thing with this technique, it has been shown that it's a bit hard for the user to recall where he arrived in the virtual environment, because you lost a bit all the feedback about where you are and everything. So that's not, sometimes it can be a bit disturbing for the user. So the second one is to do interpolation. So it's from your position to the destination, you can be moved around the virtual environment, and then you keep the sense where you are going. And the last thing is, it's a bit related with the list of defined paths, it's the guided visit metaphor. So instead of being moved from your position to the destination, you are moved from your position to the destination, but on the way, you will go close to some interesting detail of the virtual environment to try to show you some interesting stuff in the virtual environment. So I think I have a short video about what is a world in miniature. I don't know if you already see what is world in miniature, but yeah, this one I think is interesting. I think it's really the original video about world in miniature. So the first time it appeared in, I think, 1995. Yeah, so here the user is using HMD, and we have the feedback that he is seeing on this TV. So here he's using this kind of tablet to hold the world in miniature. And here we have this world in miniature here, and for now he's interacting with some object in the world in miniature. So instead of interacting directly in the virtual world, he can just interact in the world in miniature, and here I will come back, I think. I find it interesting because here he's interacting with one special object, and we will see that this special object is the point of view of the user. So here this, we miss it, it will come back. And this small black thing is the camera. So the user viewpoint in the virtual room, and so when he moves this camera in the world in miniature, he modifies his viewpoint on the virtual world. Yeah, and this thing is just using two world in miniature to move objects from one room to another. But I think there is still something interesting at the end. Okay. Yeah, the idea is, as you can see, it's to use backface scaling to remove the face that are in front of the user that you can see inside this room. And so here the world in miniature takes the aspect of one particular room, but it can also be different, be the full map of the virtual environment or some stuff like that. Okay, and the last thing, the last thing about navigation is so multi-scale navigation technique, because as soon as you are in a virtual, multi-scale virtual environment, you may want also to change your scale. So the scale can be seen that an additional degree of freedom, so you can increase or decrease your size, but and so you can modify the scale manually, but that's also something that can be a bit hard to do. So we have several authors have tried to present several techniques to try to help you to change your scale. So one of the first techniques that has been proposed is the zoom head button. So here the idea is to, like you do a rectangle on a PDF, for example, or in Photoshop to zoom in a particular image, for example, you can do the same in a virtual environment. So you can use your hand to define a kind of a rectangle, and then you are moved to this, it enables you to zoom in to the object. So it's what this user is doing. So he's drawing a rectangle with his hand, and then it will allow him to zoom in on this particular object. So this is for the manual thing, but quickly people saw that it's not really easy sometimes to manipulate the scale, because when you decrease your scale, then you are a bit too small, and you have to re-increase, and that's a bit boring. So they have proposed some automatic scale modification. So I give you here two examples. So one is the bounding box example. So here you want to explore the inside of a human body, and you have a set of box inside which is correspond to different level of zoom detail. And you have to, if I remember properly, you have two ways to zoom in or zoom out. You can use this magnifying glass to select some particular box, and then you are your size is decreased to fit inside this box and can explore the stuff inside this box. Or the second one is you can, I think, travel using the flying metaphor, so you can go all over the human body, but when you enter in a new box, your scale is automatically adjusted to fit the size of this box. So if you enter a small box, your size will be decreased to be able to explore what is inside this box, but when you go out of this box, your size will be increased to can travel more quickly and go to another box. The second example is the scaled warp grab. So the idea here is you select something in the virtual environment, and then all the virtual environment is shrink to hold in your hand. So here we have the virtual environment, we select a particular object, and then all the virtual world is shrink to come close to the user. Then the user can perform the manipulation with the small object, and then it can release the object, and the virtual world come back at the real size. Okay, so that was just to give you an overview of navigation. Now I'll talk quickly also about object manipulation. So we can also have here two ways of interacting with objects. So we have the egocentric way, so it's related to the user, and the exocentric way, to interact with the object, so it's more related to the virtual environment. So two examples of that is the scaled world grab, because you modify the size of the virtual environment to interact with it, or to interact with also the world in miniature. So usually, but it's almost the same. So either you interact with the virtual world, or you interact with a small virtual world, or a different virtual world, but the interaction are almost always the same. So I will not talk again about exocentric versus exocentric, because the manipulation is the same. It's just two different ways to interact with the virtual world. So usually for object manipulation, we can be decomposed in two main tasks. So one is the selection of the object, and the other one is the manipulation. I will talk mainly about some example of enable you to do either the selection or either the manipulation, or sometimes both. So the first one is the more old one, and what you have seen, for example, in this video. It's the virtual hand. So you have a virtual hand that map your real hand position, and you can select object like that and move object. So it's cool because it's fit what you are doing in the virtual in the real world, sorry. But the problem is that if you want to interact with some object far away, you have to travel, interact with the object, come back, travel, interact with the object, and sometimes it can be a bit boring. So we want sometimes to take advantage of to be in the virtual world to interact quickly with some further away object. So that's why some people have proposed some other technique to interact with a further away object. So for example, there is a go-go metaphor. So the idea is when you interact with, you have still a virtual hand. So when you interact with some object close to you, it's the same. So it's the position of your virtual hand, is mapped to your real hand. But when you want to interact with some faraway object, you can kind of send your hand far away. So if I think here, it's when the hand is close to the user, it's controlling position. So the position of the virtual map exactly the position of your real hand. But when you reach the border of your interaction area, the virtual hand start to go far away and using by an exponential displacement. And then you can send far away your hand and interact with some object far away. Yeah, and it moves exponentially when you reach the border. Another way is to use just simply a 3D cursor, try to mimic what we do with the mouse. So you can control this 3D cursor, so in position. So when you move a device in a virtual, in the real world, it's map the position of the cursor, but it can also control in speed. So for example, you can use a joystick to move this 3D cursor. So that can be useful in some cases, but usually we see that this kind of thing is a bit boring, because if you use a joystick to move this 3D cursor, it's sometimes a bit hard to do. So that's why people have tried also to implement some other techniques. So one which is really famous, and I think it's the technique which is the most used in virtual environment, it's using a virtual ray to mimic a laser pointer. So the idea is you have this virtual ray, and you can directly select an object like the table here and pick the table and interact with the table. So I think it's the most famous one. And the last example is about using some selection on what we call image plane interaction. So the idea is to use one part of the body to point and to select objects. So here there is several ways of selecting objects. So one is you can put your object between your two fingers, and there is several ways. Remember, you can point with your finger, put your hand under the object, or draw a kind of rectangle around the object. But the idea is the same. You interact with this image plane, so what you see, in fact, of the virtual environment. And I think I put the video there. We'll see all the video, but
this video presents the submission created in the context of the student project Interaction in Virtual Reality, which was helped by the Artificial Intelligence Group of Bielefeld University.
Yeah, so here the idea is just to show you a small recap of all this interaction, navigation and interaction technique. It's not all of them, but it's some of them, so
after drawing the path on the ground with
so here, yeah, they are drawing to, for travel, they are drawing the path on the ground, so it's kind of a bit of exocentric navigation when you select the destination, but now you are drawing the path, but it's at least, I think we'll see it better a bit later. I will not come back.
Our first selection method is the uncomplicated ray cast. Utilizing a user body in form of a star.
And here they are using this virtual ray to select objects. And I think then they combine these two techniques. So the drawing the path by using this virtual ray and selecting objects with this virtual ray.
For our first submission, we combined the path drawing with the ray casting method. In path drawing mode, it is possible to draw a path while an object is still selected. If while drawing you made a mistake, you can also interrupt the current path simply by drawing a new one. A switch to raycasting mode allows you to manipulate the object. The next travel method is the easily understandable walking in place. By continuously lifting your feet and placing them down again on the Wii balance board, you can move forward in small steps. Thereby, the length of the lifting period determines the movement's velocity. If you wear a pair of track glasses, you can change the current moving direction by turning your head. Walking in place is also easily combinable with the raycasting method. As the two methods use different hardware, a selected object still attached to the raycasting user body does not influence the walking in any way.
It's not really fast to travel by using this technique. It can depend also on the implementation, because it can also be quite efficient sometimes, but here it's looking
like... The word in miniature travel method makes it especially easy to keep track of your activities. After the word in miniature is activated by pressing a button, it follows the tracker on your left hand. To the remote held on the right hand, a staff is attached, which functions as a user body. If you move the staff onto the ground of the word in miniature and press another button, the viewpoint is changed to the corresponding spot on the ground of the main scene.
Here you see that they are just using the teleportation way of traveling, so that's good because that's fast, but that can also be a bit disturbing.
The word in miniature can also be combined with the raycasting method. The combination is possible because the two user bodies are operated with different buttons. A special feature of the combination is that you can not only select and manipulate objects in the main scene, but also easily extract objects from the world in miniature, and they will be correctly scaled. The second selection method is the highly functional image plane. After picking the selection mode with a fist gesture, you use your thumb and index finger to form a semicircle so you can scroll through nearby objects' bounding boxes. A grasping gesture selects the current object and activates the manipulation mode, in which you can, for example, pull an object closer by forming two grasping gestures. If at that moment you adjust the distance between your hands, the object is scaled. If you form only one grasping gesture and move your other hand around it, you can rotate the currently selected object around all three axes. Hereby, it is of no importance which hand is the grasping one. Once you are satisfied with your manipulation, you can save your changes by, again, forming the fist gesture. However, if your changes are unsatisfactory, you can reject them by spreading all your fingers.
So it's combined both here, the selection using image plane and also this scaled walk grab where you bring the object close to you, you manipulate the object and you bring it back to the virtual world. I think there is still something.
Next travel method is the innovative lean-based velocity. By leaning sideways on the Wii balance board, you can influence the current moving direction. By leaning forwards, the movement is executed. Each movement lasts only as long as the center of gravity is not directly above the board.
Yeah, I don't remember what is the last interaction technique. We'll see if it's interesting or not.
Lean-based velocity is the first travel method we combined with image plane.
Stop there.
As image plane relies on the two R-Progler,
okay, so just to finish on the object manipulation, so the problem sometimes is that selection and manipulation are not it's a bit weird. No, selection techniques are not always suitable for manipulation. So, it's, for example, in the case of a virtual ray, it's convenient to pick an object, but if I want to apply a rotation of this object, it's not always possible, because I can pick the object, I can apply rotation around the virtual ray axis, but if I want to apply rotation on the other angle, it can be a bit bothering. So if I pick this chair here, I can maybe rotate it a bit like that, so I can pick it, rotate it, but you see that it's really not convenient. Or I can pick it and I have to move around to rotate it, but it's not convenient. So the idea is sometimes there is several solutions to overcome that. So you can combine several interaction tools together. So for example, I think it's Omer, they combine a virtual ray and a virtual hand. So I can pick the object and move it using my other hand. So just combining like that some interaction tool. What we have seen, we can also move the object close to user to manipulate it. And one thing we will see later, we can also take advantage of being several users in the virtual environment to manipulate it. So I can pick the object, but another one can apply the rotation, which is what we will see later. And on the last thing about object manipulation, sometimes you can also attach some interaction tool to the object. So it's a bit similar to what we do in, for example, in PowerPoint. We have this small rectangle that appears around an object, and we can resize the object and things like that. It's also possible to do the same in a virtual world. So you select an object, and some tool to manipulate the object will appear, and you can use this tool to manipulate the object. Okay, and one last slide about control application. I will not go into detail into that, but just to show you that it exists. So the control of application is usually how you really control the virtual reality parameter, environment parameters. So how you exit, put in pause, change the rendering, select new tools or things like that. So there are several ways to do that. At the beginning, they start to do it by using some 2D menu. But you can easily understand that it's not really good, and it can be a bit break this kind of immersion. So we make a lot of effort to immerse you in a virtual world, and then we pop up some 2D menu that breaks everything. So that's why this solution is not really used anymore. So some other people have tried to put some 3D, also 3D menu, but that's a bit the same. It's slightly better because it's still in 3D and it doesn't break the immersion, but it's not really convenient. So now more and more solutions try to make it more integrated into the virtual environment. So one example here is having this thing is what they call a virtual palette. So it's just a piece of glass where you can interact with this piece of glass. And the idea is to project, it's not on this piece of glass, but because in this case they are in a cave, so in a virtual environment setup. So they project on the screen behind this piece of glass the image of the menu on this small palette. And the idea is just you can hold this palette like that, and you can see the menu on the palette and just interact with that, and it's less intrusive than having a big menu in the virtual world. And now also a common way to do it is just using a tablet or a smartphone to have just the menu here, and it doesn't break the immersion. So that's it for control application. You probably know some of the application of virtual reality, but it's increased every day a bit more. So there is a lot of we sometimes see just application of virtuality for fun, but it's not really true. There is a lot of application of virtual reality for a lot of stuff. So one first thing is all the scientific data analysis, so especially when it's 3D data, and it's sometimes really hard to visualize in a normal screen. So a lot of people are using virtual reality to look some 3D data. And for example, here we have the, I don't know the name, the turbulence, is it correct? Turbulence of the plane, of the air around the plane, and you can easily visualize that in. So if you look here at this image, it's a bit hard to see how the turbulence are. But if you see it in 3D, it's easier to understand what's going on there. more and more companies are also using virtual reality for industrial application. So in two different ways. So the first one is for the design or conception. So here you can see the cave at Renault, which is, you probably know, it's a car company in France. And they just built a new cave. So they are using the cave so for design. So they come at several users into the cave and they look the design of the new car before building the new car. So the idea is here, you don't have, before there was building a lot of prototype of the car, and you look the new prototype, but no, it doesn't look good. So you have to build a new prototype. And it can take a week or even more. So now the idea is to do it in a virtual environment, so you can directly modify the prototype if it doesn't fit what you want. So this is one way. It's also they are also using it. They put the driver into the car and see if the viewing angle and everything is correct. And they make it drive on the road and see if you don't have some weird thing, because when you draw the car on the paper, it looks good, but when you go into it, you have some big thing that breaks the view, and it's not good. So they try it now in a virtual reality setup first. Of course, I think they build still some one or two prototypes after that, but it reduces a lot the number of prototypes they have to build. And it can also be used in the fabrication process. So I think here it's an example from Airbus, where when you create a CAD model of a car or here a plane, so you have to create the model, but you have also to think about how people will assemble all this piece. And they use virtual reality to try first to assemble this piece and see if it's correct or not. So yeah, one example is I think it was from car companies. They want to put painting into the car and inside also all the pieces of the car. And sometimes it's not possible for the employee to put the how was it called that the painting gun. I don't know if it's correct, but you know they use this big thing to put the painting. And sometimes the space is not big enough to put the painting thing inside. So it's better to detect this problem before building the launching the production of the cars. And when you launch it, and you figure out that it's not going on. And here it's an example of also for building airplanes. They also want to see if it would be possible and will not hurt the employees that will build the plane. So here in green, I think you have the area where it's convenient to work for the employee, and they just check that they don't have to work under this area and can, I don't know, get back pain or thing like that. That's why they use virtual reality. Of course, yeah, virtual reality is used a lot for training and education. So especially in some really complex scenario, like, I don't know, nuclear incident or thing like that, they can train, for example, firemen to work in team and to solve this problem when there is a really big thing. And this big thing, we hope that it don't happen. So that's why they cannot be trained to that in real, and they train them in virtual for that. Can be used also for phobia and therapy and rehabilitation. So here is an example of a supermarket application. And it's for people that get brain injured and are not able to do a normal thing. So they train them first to do really simple things like shopping and things like that. But they train them first in virtual, because in virtual they can control the virtual environment. So for example, if they have to do their shopping, at the beginning, they can put some automatic navigation. So they just go all over the supermarket and they can grab object. And then they change the mode and let them travel by their own in the supermarket and things like that. And the last thing, of course, it's the main part that we see from virtual reality, but I don't really think it's what we see when we look the media and things like that, but it's not the main part in my opinion. Yeah, there is also entertainment, so of course video game, a virtual visit of a museum, for example. If you cannot travel to a museum, you can visit it sometime with virtual reality. It's also if some monument that has disappeared because it's really old and that has been broken, you can now visit them using virtual reality. And also for social communication, so you can use telepresence, kind to meet some friend in a virtual room, for example, and work together. So I think that's it for this small recap about virtual reality. So we'll switch now to collaboration in virtual reality. I don't know what time is it, but I think we can make a small break at the half of the class. It's not now, I think, but in half an hour we can do a small break. Yeah, okay. So, what is collaboration in a virtual environment? So the idea is, of course, we have several users so working or playing together in a virtual environment. So it can be for co-expertise, for example, of 3D data. So several users want to look together some 3D data. It's a kind of co-expertise. The second thing is when you have to do complex manipulation. So one user is not able to do the manipulation by its own. So it's convenient to be several users to do the manipulation. It can also be the case for training, like the fireman. You want to train people to work in team, so that you have to recreate this real scenario and put all the people together. Yeah, and the last thing is about social presence. So you want to make the people feel that they are with some other people, even if it's not real. So there is usually we can usually decompose the collaborative the collaboration in virtual environment in two kinds of collaboration. So the first one is co-located collaboration. So I put back this scheme about the virtual environment. So we still have one user interacting with the virtual environment, and what we call co-located is now we have several users interacting with this virtual environment. So it's what we call co-located virtual environment because these users are in the same room and they are collaborating in the same virtual environment. I will show you a small example of that. So here, two users are manipulate together a virtual object. So it's a piece of a car, and so they are doing the manipulation in virtual together. So it's what we call co-located collaboration, and they are using a tangible device that mimics the virtual object. And then it's a comparison of several tangible interface and things like that, but I will not go in detail. So the idea is that there are two users working in the same immersive room. You get the main idea. And they can reshape the tangible interface to fit better fit the shape of the virtual object. Yeah, so this was co-located collaboration. And the other thing about collaboration is when you have still one user interacting with the virtual world, and then you want to put several other users, but these users are interacting remotely. And so you have to synchronize the virtual environment through the network. And all the users have their own interaction devices and can each user in a different room or different country, and they are all interacting in the same virtual environment. So it's what we call remote collaboration. And I still have an example from my PhD. So here it was a collaboration between Rennes, so in France, and London in the UK. And the idea, the user has to move a cutting plane in some scientific data. So it was some seismic data from an earthquake. And they have to move together a cutting plane to find some point of interest into that data. And we have shown that when the user have to do some really precise positioning of this cutting plane, it was more efficient to do it with two users than just by one. We make a comparison between just doing the manipulation alone and doing the manipulation with two users, and it was more efficient and more precise to do it with two users. And here we can see that the two users can have a different point of view on the virtual environment and just interact together. And we will talk about awareness, but here it was pretty simple for representing the other user. It was just his field of view, and that was all. And it was funny because some participants to the experiment report that they had really the feeling to work with someone else, even it was just a really simplistic representation. So there is this pyramid to display the field of view of the user, and these two, we'll see it better, two cubes that represent the hand of the other user. So here we have the field of view of the remote user, and this is one hand, and this is his second hand. And that's what, so it's really a simplistic representation. So I will mainly firstly talk about awareness. So what is awareness? So awareness is the perception of the other user. So we want to know first where they are in the virtual environment, because when you are in a virtual environment, each user can have his own point of view on the virtual environment. And so it's the interest also of the virtual environment. It's that all the users can have their own point of view. So it's interesting because each one can explore the data and things like that, but you have to know where the other are and what are they doing, because if you want to collaborate, you have to understand what they are doing. It's better if you don't have to ask, what are you doing? And you can just, with a simple look, see what they are doing. So even what are they looking? It's the first thing to know what are they looking? Are they looking at me, or are they looking in a totally different direction? So I cannot say, oh, look this, if they are looking in a total direction. So this is some stuff that are really simple when we collaborate in the real world. But when we are in a virtual environment, it can be a bit more complex. So that's why this awareness has to be also good in a virtual environment. So where are they? What are they doing? But also what they can do. So it's what they can see. So I cannot ask them, please, can you move this object, if they are looking in another direction and cannot see this object. Could they see what I'm showing to them? Could they do what I'm asking them to do? So sometimes they have some interaction tools that have a limited interaction area. So I cannot ask them, can you move this object there, if For example, they are using an haptic device, and the interaction area of this haptic device is limited. So it's just good to understand what they can do also. So the goal of awareness is, of course, to improve the mutual understanding between users. I think here is some example. So if I say they are just next to me, it's okay, but where next to me? And just in front of me, okay, they are in front of me, but where are they looking? So it's, the idea is really try to improve this mutual understanding and don't have to use some voice communication for everything, because then it can be a bit annoying. And this awareness has to be multisensorial restitution. So we can have some visual awareness of the remote user. So it's usually what we have. We can see sometimes the avatar of the remote user. But we also can want to have some audio awareness, so heard the other user and heard the sound coming from the direction where they are. And also we can have haptic awareness. So I will go quickly over. I think I will detail mainly visual awareness because it's the main thing we usually use. But I will give you a quick overview of audio and haptic awareness. So visual awareness can be decomposed in, I put this scale because, so it's usually what we call avatar. So it's the representation of the other user in the virtual environment. And I put this scale, we'd go from simplified to realistic. So there is really, really several ways to display avatar in a virtual environment. So I show you this example where the representation was really simple. We have this pyramid to represent the field of view, and here the two cubes for the two hands. And this was really simple, but what was funny is that people had really the feeling to be with some other people in the virtual environment. So it's a bit related to what I tell before about presence. So it's not only if it's realistic or not, but it's if you feel involved in the task sometime and you are really working on something and you really feel that this is some another user. And that can be enough. It really depends on the application. So in a slightly more realistic, we have here this example, which is interesting to me because you have also a really, really simple representation of the user, but just behind the user, you have also the video feed showing the face of the user. So it can also improve a bit the mutual understanding and the feeling of presence. Here you have some non-realistic avatar. Here you have still a slightly more realistic avatar. You have the avatar of Second Life, which start to look realistic but doesn't fit the real user. And then you start to have some, it's coming, we have more and more 3D reconstruction of the user. So this is me, if you can see. So it's just a 3D reconstruction using a simple Kinect. And you can have a 3D model of the face and in real time, animated in real time. So but you see it's not perfect. The idea was just to use a simple Kinect to do this reconstruction and having a kind of realist, close to the real world avatar from the user. And you can also have some really, really detailed 3D reconstruction. So this one is a 3D reconstruction that can match the real face at the pore level. So on the face you can see even the really, really small detail, but the bad thing is now it doesn't work in real time, but I'm sure that one day it will work in real time. Yeah.
There's like some work in the Supra this year.
Yeah.
This technique, they are able to animate the avatar in real time.
Yeah, they have to. Yeah, this one was a really high resolution, but I think they are not able to do the high resolution now in real time, no?
I think they are.
Okay, maybe, yeah, but I'm sure it will come. It's probably, yeah. There is, each year they improve their technique. I don't know if it's the same people, but These people are from Switzerland at the ATH, and each year they improve. They're working from at Disney Research, and each year they improve their techniques. So I'm sure it will come. I didn't check this year what they did, but. Okay, so now we have the representation of the user, but then we want to animate them, because if it's just static model, it's not good. So we want to have some animation of the avatar, and here I could also have display the same scale, so simplistic animation to really realistic. So I will show you a really... I think you have probably seen some of this video, but this one is short, and I find it interesting because it shows that with a simple Kinect, we can already do some not bad animation.
Let's take a look at the technology behind Avatar Kinect. On the screen, you see Ron with his Xbox avatar. We use the RGB image and depth information from the Kinect sensor to capture facial movement. You can see the 3D mesh we generate from this data and watch it change as Ron moves his head and talks. We track his head as well as his mouth and eyebrow movements and render these on his Xbox avatar.
Okay, that's it. So you see that even with a simple Kinect, we can already have some facial animation and things like that. So. So this was the simplistic animation, but you can also have some really high-level animation of the avatar by using some motion tracking and things like that. So here, I think it's, how to call that, it's kind of a suit, but they have some sensor inside all the suit, and it can... it can detect all the body motion, and so you can use this kind of thing. You can also use infrared camera to track and put marker everywhere on the user and to have some realistic tracking of the body. And I think that's it for animation. Another thing that for remote collaboration, you can also have some asymmetric role in the virtual environment. So it's not always all the people working in the same thing. So, but here you have some asymmetric role. So it was an example, pretty old, but pretty interesting, where you have some user working in the virtual environment. So they call them mortals you, because they are inside the virtual environment doing some stuff. And then you have one who has what they call deity's view, so that can see the world as a world in miniature, and can so here we see the avatar of this deity, and so he can control the other user and can help them to perform tasks, maybe move them in several positions. So it's kind of asymmetric collaboration. And then, but the thing is that then the avatar have also asymmetric representation. And it's a bit the same here for multi-scale collaborative virtual environment. So it's a bit a problem to represent the scale of the user, because you can use big avatar for represent the ones that are big, and small avatar to represent the ones that are far, but it's sometimes not really good, because here we don't know if this one is far away or if it's small. So it's, I think in my knowledge, there is not really good way for now to represent the different scale of the user in a virtual environment. So usually people do this thing, so they put a big avatar for the big one, a small avatar for the small one, but yeah, it's sometimes a problem, because yeah, for example, this one, we don't know if it's close or if it's small or if it's far away. And this one, we see that he's big, but then we cannot view any other thing because he's too big, and he hides all the rest of the virtual world. So that's also not really good. So I think that's all for virtual awareness. I switch to audio awareness, and I will just spend this slide on that. So if if we want to have a good audio awareness, we need to have a specialized voice restitution. So if the other user is on my left, I want to hear him on my left. So the idea is to send the remote users. It's not only sending the voice, it's also sending the noise. For example, if he's working, one good way to convey awareness is maybe just to put the noise of his feet on the ground. And that gives a lot of information. So where they are, what they are doing. If I heard him running, I know that he's running. And another thing is that we can also add some sound to describe the action. So we don't have to fit to the real world scenario. We can also add more things to help the user to understand what they are doing. So for example, when they are grabbing a tool, we can put a particular sound. So I hear that the other user is using now this tool or thing like that. And of course, we need to be able to specialize the sound to hear him coming from the correct direction. So there is several ways to do that. I will not go into detail because one particular research field. I think some people are working just on this particular thing. So I think it's really huge. But yeah, basically you can use some lot of speaker in a room, but you can also use some air plug that can give you where the other user is. It enables you to do some spatialized sound. And so I think that's all for audio, and I will switch to haptic awareness. So the idea is here to feel the force feedback of the other user in the virtual world. So it can be some direct force feedback, so you can touch the other through haptic device. So here you have an example of a virtual handshake. So both users are holding a virtual device, and they are able to do some kind of virtual handshake. So you feel directly the force of the other because you are kind of touching the other user. So that's why I call it direct here. You can also have some what sometimes they call affective haptic. So it's how to say that. It's a bit related, these two. It can be asymmetric, so you just want to convey the force from one user to another, and just to convey some affective feedback. So for example, it's usually Japanese are really really like this kind of technology. So for example, you have this belt here that can be tied, and you can feel the force from another user. So a remote user can tighten more or less the belt, and you can feel that the other user is tying him in his arm or thing like that. So it's kind of affective haptic. There is a lot of funny stuff sometimes with some pillows. So you can hold the pillow, and the pillow is giving you some force feedback, and you have the feeling that you are in the bed with someone else or like that. So this is really what I call direct feedback of the other, because you feel the feedback from the other. But you can also have some indirect force feedback of the other when you are manipulating together objects. Because if you apply a force on an object and another user applies the same force, and another force on the same object, then you both can fight each other for the object, or you feel the force from the other on this object. And that's it. Yeah, and it's usually you can use haptic device for that, like this haptic arm. And when you manipulate object, you feel the force from the other. So now we have all this way of doing awareness of the other user, but one thing, it's still hard to model this thing and be able to understand what's going on the virtual environment. So some users, especially Benford, has worked a lot on awareness models. So how try to to model the awareness and to display it in the virtual environment. So Benford is really famous for this spatial model of interaction. So the idea is to be able to compute which user can interact with which others. So Benford defined two terms. So the first one is medium. So the medium is a typical communication medium or channel. So it's what we saw here just before. So there is a visual awareness, the audio awareness, the haptic awareness. And the aura is the field, the subspace where this particular medium can apply. So so for example, for the visual medium, the aura can be all the field of view of one user. So no, it's a bit complicated because after we have the focus and the nimbus. I will come back on that. So the aura is all the where the user can be seen by the other. So basically, it's everywhere. So it's all around the user. So for visual, it's almost all around the user. But for sound, for example, the sound can have just a limited subspace. And this user can be heard only in this limited subspace. And that's why so the aura can model the space where the user can be seen or can be heard, propagate this feedback around him. And then Bedford introduced, spatial medium. So the aura determines, it's what I was saying, determines the potential interaction between user. It's also on the technical point of view because, for example, you don't want to hear the sound from all the, if you are in a massive online virtual environment with thousands of users, you don't want to hear the noise of all the users because you start to be crazy and it's not informative at all. So it's why it's also they use this aura that's on the technical point of view, just to transmit the feedback from one user to another only when there is some collision between the aura. And so user is responsible for controlling the interaction. I don't know that. Yeah, and the aura is also a way to measure the awareness between two users because it can be also asymmetric. So for example, for the visual feedback, I can see in front of me, but I cannot see, of course, on my back. And so it really depends on the medium. And that I will come on that because that's why he introduced the focus on the nimbus. So the idea of focus of nimbus is to split this aura in two parts, and here, and the focus is the area where a user perceives the other. So for example, I put here the example for the visual feedback. So my focus, it's what I'm seeing, but my nimbus is where the other user can perceive a particular user. So for the visual feedback, even if I'm showing you my back, you can still see me. So that's why the nimbus is all around the user, but the focus is just where I'm looking at. And that's why at the beginning he put aura, but then when he tried to implement that, he seen that aura is not enough, in fact, and he has to introduce focus and nimbus. And so focus and nimbus can be different for each particular medium. So for example, for the sound, we can hear mostly all around us. But for the visual feedback, we can see just in front. And if you want to model that, we have to split them into focus and nimbus, and split them also by a particular medium. So I think that's the main idea of this modeling awareness. And then what these things are useful to, it's because each user in the virtual world can, it's here, so the idea, I put again this scheme here, and we have here this shared virtual environment, which is synchronized between all the users. But all the users can have different interaction device. And their goal is to interact in the virtual environment, but they have some different interaction device. And of course, the idea is how we can represent these different activities and capability of this user in the virtual world. Because depending on of their device, they don't have the same interaction capabilities. And how we can represent the interaction capabilities in the virtual world. So how can they? How can you understand what the others are doing? How can they understand what the other can do? So, it's and I will show you some example of that. So, for that we have introduced some interaction workspaces. So the idea is to model a 3D space in the real world, which is associated to a particular device. So, for example, if I'm using a big screen, it can be my visual workspace, which it's a place where I can see. And it's the place where I can see, but it would be convenient to also show it in the virtual world that the other can see what is my field of view. And it depends on the device I'm using. If I have a small screen, my field of view in the virtual environment is really small. If my screen is really big, my field of view is really big. So it would be good to have some way to display that in the virtual environment that the other user are able to understand what device I am using and what are my capabilities. So it's associated to a particular material device. It enables to the other user to understand how I perceive or interact with the virtual world. So I talk about visual, but it can also be physical displacement, audio, and haptic. For example, if I'm in a cave, I can walk in a, I don't know, 4x4 square, and it would be good to show that to the other user. So why integrating this interaction workspace in the virtual world? So it's maybe a bit what I say. Each user can have different interaction workspace, of course, depending on their material device. And the idea is to take into account workspace for user interaction. So adapt the interaction technique. So each user also, if they see on the virtual world what are the interaction technique. For example, if I'm using a haptic arm and I want to move a table there and I see that the interaction area of my haptic mark doesn't reach the table, I say, oh, first I have to travel to be able to catch this table. I don't try to catch the table and see that I cannot do it, and then I have to move, and then I can catch the table. So that's why it's good also to represent this interaction workspace, and also the thing that capability perception. So I can understand my interaction capability, but the other can also understand my interaction capability. So I think I will show you example because it will help to understand. I show first some example about the user's physical displacement workspace. So it's the place where the user can walk just by physical displacement in the real world. So the first example is the magic carpet in 3DM. So what they call magic carpet, in fact, this red line. So in this application, they were using a head-mounted display with a magnetic tracker. And the magnetic tracker has a circular field. And so you don't want to go out of this field because then you lost the tracking. So that's why they display this red circle on the ground. And so you have the user have to stay inside this red circle to be tracked by the magnetic tracker. And so they display it both for the user because he can know where he cannot go, and also for the other because we cannot ask them to go out of this circle. Here it's the magic barrier tape. It's a bit similar. It's in sometime when you are in a cave, the immersion and the feeling of being in the virtual environment, it's so good that you cannot see the screen anymore. So the idea is to avoid that the because it's happened a lot, that even me when I ran the experiment during my PhD, it's happened a lot that people hurt behind the screen. So the idea of this thing was to put some barrier tape on the screen to show you where the screen is. So the idea is, I don't remember in this case, but we did also some stuff like that. But the idea is not to show always this barrier tape because it's a bit annoying to have always something. But when you come close to the screen, you start to display this barrier tape to say, oh, you are reaching the limit of your interaction workspace. And here, I think what was interesting, it's also, so you have, I think you have two, one was always there and one appear when you are too close. And the idea, it's, you can use also one, I think it was just your hand, or if because they use virtual hand like we saw before. And you can push the barrier tape and it's travel, it enables you to travel in the virtual world. But it's a bit complicated to explain, but the idea, you have this barrier tape all around, so you can move around freely. But when you reach the limit, you can push the barrier tape, and it was moving all your interaction workspace in the virtual world. Like if you are in a spaceship. Because you can have two ways of traveling. You can, if you move in the physical area, it's a way to travel in the virtual world, but you can also use all the navigation technique we have seen to move your workspace into the virtual world.
It's like lifting a mouse if you get to the edge of the desk.
It's a bit similar to that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you have this thing to. Yeah, and I will come back a bit on this notion of traveling with all your interaction workspace later. Just the idea here, just to give you kind of example of what is interaction workspace. And here I give some example about haptic interaction workspace. So the idea, you have your haptic arms, and you know that the area, the interaction area of haptic arm is really kind of limited because it can be just a sphere of 1 meter, something like that. And the idea is try to first display that and extend this area, because also you don't want that to interact in this small area. And one interesting example is the bubble technique. So this sphere represents the interaction area of the haptic device. So when you manipulate this small cursor into the area, and when the cursor is inside the area, you manipulate it in position. So the position of the haptic arm is mapped to the position of the cursor. So it's really a one-to-one relationship. But when you reach the border, it's a bit the same like with the magic barrier tape. You can control the position of the bubble in speed. So it enables you to move the bubble somewhere in the virtual world. And then you can perform again your haptic manipulation. Okay, and so now I come to this notion of immersive, interactive, virtual cabin. So the idea is to organize and integrate all this interaction workspace in the virtual environment. Because we see that it's good to modelize all this interaction workspace, but it would be better if we can have really an integration of this model in the virtual environment and a good organization. So that's why we use this notion of a virtual cabin. So the idea is to enable users to carry all the interaction workspace in the virtual world. So we can see this thing like kind of a spaceship that fits the material device of the user. So if using a cave, the cave can be a kind of spaceship in the virtual world, and inside the spaceship he has all this interaction workspace, and he can travel inside the virtual world with this thing. So here it's just an example. So you have here the visualization workspace, so where the user can see the haptic workspace where he can interact with the haptic arms, and the user displacement workspace where he can walk inside the immersive environment. And the idea is to embed everything in one metaphoric representation, and in order to organize all these things and provide a way also to represent all this interaction workspace to the other user. So I give some example here of this activities perception, so to understand what the other, for example, what the user is seeing. So here it's Fraser that proposed to, it's kind of classic, to display the field of view of the user. So it's here it's a visualization workspace, and he proposed to display that using a wireframe pyramid and in the virtual world. Another way to represent what the other users are doing, it's Fraser proposed also to use, because if I use a laser pointer to interact in a virtual environment, it's going to be hard to see who is interacting with which object. So that's why here, if for example I use this virtual ray to move the table, you see the table moving, but you will not understand that it's me who is moving the table. So Fraser proposed to use this extensible arm, so my arm will extend until the table, and you will see that it's me who is moving the table. And here, in this case, they display really the virtual ray to show you who is interacting, and they also put the color of the user to see that which user is moving this. I think it was a slider. So it's for the activity perception, so what the other are doing. And now for the capability perception, it's just also a bunch of examples. So example for the user himself, so it's what I was saying here. So we have the user is inside the cave, and we don't want him to hurt, and even not to hurt, but to understand when he can walk without hurting the screen. So that's why we display here on the screen some kind of barrier to say stop, this is the screen and you can go further. And another interesting example is an example about the interaction workspace. So how you can show this interaction workspace to the other user without being too intrusive. You don't want also to have some huge 3D geometry that represent the workspace, because it can be a bit, it's for all the user, you have some huge geometries that represent the interaction workspace, it's too much. So that's why here we use some light to show what is the interaction workspace. So here we have two views. So this one is the view of this yellow user, and this one is the view from another user. So here this user cannot interact with this cone because it's too far. And we can see here that he is too far, he cannot interact with it. Here he comes close and we see that the object start to have the lighting from the yellow lighting from the user. So we can guess that this object is close to the border of the interaction workspace. And we can see here that it's really close. And here the object start to be really yellow, so which means it is in the interaction workspace of the user. And here, for another user, it's also pretty easy to understand. We see that the object start to have some yellow lightning, so it means that this user will be able to interact with this object. Okay, so that's it. Do you have any question about this awareness and thing? And I think we can make a small break and continue after that. Do you have any question? Okay, good. Thank you.